The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille.
Welcome to Wine, Food, and Travel with me, Mark Millen, on Italian Wine Podcast. Listen in as we journey to some of Italy's most beautiful places in the company of those who know them best, the families who grow grapes and make fabulous wines. Through their stories, we will learn not just about their wines, but also about their ways of life, the local and regional foods and specialities that pair naturally with their wines, and the most beautiful places to visit. We have a wonderful journey of discovery ahead of us, and I hope you will join me. Welcome to Wine, Food, and Travel with me, Mark Millen, on Italian Wine Podcast. Today it is my great pleasure to travel to the Tuscan seaboard to meet my guest, Rocco Toscani from Azienda Agricola Toscani, an estate that produces wine, olive oil, and which breeds quarter horses, cintasinese pigs, and homing pigeons. Quite a range of activities. Ciao, Rocco. Thanks for being my guest this morning. How are you? And is it a beautiful day in Casale Marittimo?
Ciao, good morning. It's a fantastic day. It's kind of chilly. We're pruning. But luckily, I could come inside a little bit and warm up and talk with you.
Yeah, pruning's a real winter task, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard. You can't even do office work in a way because you have to concentrate so much. So it's even frustrating sometimes.
Yeah, and I bet you get cold hands doing that.
Oh, I get really cold hands. But the coldest is the feet.
Oh, right.
Feet get really cold because it's wet, it's humid. The hands work. The feet just stand there and wait.
Yeah. I mean, we always think the sun is shining and it's warm in Tuscany, but winters can be quite harsh, can't they?
There are some days that it gets cold with north winds, but we're getting pretty mild winters lately, especially some are starting to become very dry. So this is kind of a big problem for us.
Yeah, because that winter rain's important for the vineyard to soak up, isn't it?
Yeah, very important. And yeah, it's starting to, we have very hard rains for a short period, and then it stops for many months. And this is one of the years that it's doing this, and it's kind of, it's not really helping us.
Yeah, that's those crazy rain bombs that just everything runs away. Rocco, I want our listeners to really have an understanding of where you are at Casale Marittimo. So can you describe where you are and give our listeners a vivid picture of your world?
So Casale Marittimo is a very small town up on the hills in the province of Pisa. We are basically 4 kilometers north of Bolgheri. I imagine most of them know where Bolgheri is, a very important area of production of wine here in Tuscany. A fairly young area. We are right outside. We're neighboring to the Bolgheri area. So basically, we are 4 kilometers from the water, from the sea, at 350 meters above sea level, on the same hills as Bolgheri. So it's where we are, where it starts, the colline metallifere. So we have very red grounds, fairly loose grounds, very cold mornings, I would say. We have the valley of Volterra in the back. So we have these north winds that bring in this very cold air during the night and the early mornings. And it's a very interesting place. I don't know if anybody has ever been to Volterra. Volterra is a very Etruscan town. And the only place where you can see a little bit of the water from Volterra, which is kind of far away from the water, but the only area where you can see the water is exactly where the vineyard is. So it used to be a hill or a place where the sort of, let's call it the king of the town of Volterra would get buried. So we have in this area, we have all the tombs of the kings of Volterra that would stay between the water and Volterra. So it's kind of a very unique place. It's a beautiful place.
Okay. And of course, those Etruscans were great wine drinkers. They had beautiful wine drinking cups, and the necropolises where they buried them had a lot of remains that showed the importance of wine culture going back thousands of years.
Yeah. It's a very unique spot. My father is a photographer, and he chose this place when he was kind of a young gun. And he came over here and said that there were two places that he ever saw in his life that had the light as beautiful as here. It was California and Casale Marittimo. So he decided to buy in Casale Marittimo because of the, he says, the quality of the light. So that, I think it's also something, one of the details that is very important for growing vines here. It's the fact that we are by the water and, you know, photosynthesis, it's a big deal in winemaking. So I think it's, you know, the fact that there is this quality of light and, you know, it's a fantastic place. I would never imagine another place where I would go and live.
Did you grow up there, Rocco?
I was born here. I was grown up in the farm. My whole life was always to, I mean, I studied, I did art school in Chicago, and I did another art school in France. And every time I had like 2 days, 1 day, I would always come back home. I always did this sort of homing pigeon process my whole life, where every time I had a minute, I always come back here. So it's something that I was really tied to. And the reason why I actually got into the wine is because I was kind of scared that my father, or we weren't able to maintain the farm. You know, my father was doing this with his own job. It was kind of his hobby. And one day I realized, I said, if I don't jump in, we're going to have to sell it or rent it.
Italian Wine Podcast. If you think you love wine as much as we do, then give us a like and a follow anywhere you get your pods.
Okay, well, tell us the story of your father. He was a real visionary who believed in this area and in its potential before many others.
Still is a big visionary. He used to come here in the 60s. He was an art student in Zurich, and he would come here and paint, like do aquarels. He was doing like sort of the real artist part. And he would come up here with a loose, like a motorino. And he would paint the house that he bought, then I would say 15, 20 years later. Actually, he would come here in the 50s. And then in the late 60s, he bought the first house. And he started, building slowly this beautiful place. The first thing he started was horses. He started with two or three horses. And then the thing became kind of big. And then every year he would buy a piece of land that was neighboring to him. So he never really invested in buildings in cities or studios. So he always really only invested in this place. And, you know, for me, it's kind of a big deal to keep it going. Actually, in the 80s, he bought this place where now we have the main vineyard. He bought this field with this house that was owned by a music foundation from Austria. Stockhausen used to come here and play in the summers. He did 3 summers here playing. And basically, my father bought the place. And we got this guy that was supposed to be a big piano player, but then he started doing a lot of drugs and raising goats here in the house. And he would never leave. So he squatted the place for like 20 years or 15 years while we were owning the place. And we couldn't kick him out. When my father got the chance to kick him out, he had Angelo Gaia come and, you know, their friends. He came and he visited the place. And Angelo Gaia started to insist on the fact that he wanted to buy the place. My father wasn't really into the wine passion or business. And Angelo kept insisting in the fact that he said that a place like that, it would have been one of the best places to make grapes on the coast. So he kept going for a few years. And then my father, they said, you know what, if he's insisting so much on wanting this piece of land, it means that there is sort of a something. So he said, you know what, I'm not going to sell you the place, but why don't you help me build the vineyard? And so it happened, and it started all in the late 90s. My father started the whole thing with wine. It was going, but not going. He had another job, so it wasn't really picking up, I would say. In 2014, I took over, and I changed completely the winemaking process and how we do agriculture. And I did so in all of the farm, you know.
Were the vineyards established by then, Rocco?
Yeah, the vineyards, when I walked in, they were around, I would say.
And what varieties? Let's talk about the grapes you grow.
So they planted Syrah, Cabernet Franc, and Petit Verdot. And then we had another vineyard of Teroldego.
Teroldego. I've not heard of Teroldego in Tuscany.
Yeah, there's a lot on the coast. There still is a lot, but there was more in the late 90s, early 2000s, because it is a wine that at the beginning has a lot of fruit, has a lot of freshness to it. It gives a lot of color. It gives a lot of concentration also. So I think in the 90s, it was kind of wines that they were looking for. Now it's kind of difficult grape to grow with the temperatures we have now here. So basically what I did is when I walked into the winery, I sort of said, what are we going to do now? And what I did is I grafted all of the Petit Verdot with Syrah and Cabernet Franc. So the main vineyard now is only Syrah and Cabernet Franc. And the vineyard of Teroldego, I grafted it with Greco di Tufo. So now I'm producing only Syrah, Cabernet Franc, and Greco di Tufo. Last year, I planted another vineyard of 2 hectares of only Greco di Tufo. And I think it's a great vine, and it's planted on the area of Casale. So we have 2 hills here. On the south side, so towards Bolgheri, we have very red grounds, very loose grounds, where I have the red grapes. And on the right side, so north side, on the hill of Casale, which is a hill made of tufo, of yellow grounds, I planted Greco di Tufo. I hope it's going to be a good project. It's growing great. It's starting now, and I think it's going to be a good project.
What I think is really interesting for our listeners, Rocco, is that, you know, you're explaining where you are. You're also talking about a wine culture that goes back thousands of years to the Etruscans. And yet, in this area, when your father came in the 50s, certainly in the 60s, and I'm talking about Bolgheri as well, this Tuscan seaboard wasn't an area where vines were planted. And so in a way, that vision of your dad in California, you know, you had a sort of a blank canvas and could really plant the varieties and make the wines that you really wanted to make.
I wasn't there at the time, but my father always tells me the story that when he moved here, he would ask the local people, why isn't there any vines here? The usual answer was, oh, we're too close to the water. And he would kept answering, but in California, by the water, I mean, Bordeaux is by the water. It's not. Anyways, this area was an area where the big families from Florence would own strips of land that would go from the forest, from the hills, from the forest down to the water. And in front of the water, it used to be all swamps.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So it was hunting areas and areas where they would give the houses or their buildings and the fields to workers that would, you know, when you do the crop and you cut in half the crop, I don't know how you say it.
The mezzadria.
It was all mezzadria here. It was an extremely poor area. All the area of Bolgheri was all basically owned and worked by the marchigiani. Where we are, it was like 2 families that used to own everything. It was a poor, poor, poor area. I seen pictures of the 80s when they moved here, when I was born. It was really, you know, dry. It was a dead area. And so the only real producer here in the area was Antinori. They used to produce Rosé Antinori. It was kind of a non-easy place to do stuff because we were completely cut out from everything. It was like a really long drive. So everything started a little bit in the 80s, and he was part of this whole thing of seeing how the Bolgheri area or the interest in wine in this area started. And he sort of started a little bit later than everybody else. But I have to say, I mean, the location where we have the vines, it's an amazing place. I mean, it's an amphitheater-looking vineyard looking over the water with a lot of mistral wheel during the summer, very cold nights. It's hot. It gets really hot, but it's a fantastic place. I haven't studied viticulture. I picked up this job on the run. I'm still learning, but it's a place where you feel that the plants are in a happy place. I mean, it's good to work here.
And is that why you wanted to keep that happiness in the countryside? Is that why you decided to go for a low intervention, sustainable approach to viticulture?
Yes, it has to be. I think each one of us has to, whatever piece of land you have, it may be a small garden or a big vineyard, but our goal, our mission on this small period of time that we're here, we have to do the best we can to keep it the best way to have the next person that is going to have it, doesn't matter who, we have to take care of it in a way that we don't hurt it. We make it grow in a way. We make it a better place. So this is a little bit what was my project in making wine, in the fact that making this place a better place from whatever it was before. I mean, it's a hard thing to do, but it's respect for whatever lives in this place or whatever was missing. We introduced insects, birds, or...
Yeah, a more holistic approach to life, not just wine.
We tend to eliminate whatever we think it hurts us, but it's not like that. We need to cooperate wherever is our neighbors. And I think everything has a role. Some have a negative role and some have a positive role. But the ones that have a positive role have to be there, and also the negative ones, because most of the times the negative ones are the ones that are hunted or eaten by another positive one. I grew up in the 80s in this place, and I remember all the farmers would, you know, they wanted to share this part. And this is something that is important, that the sharing of whatever your area is important. So what I actually did for the wines that I'm doing now is going a little bit back to what was the real feel of the area. You have to be part of your area. You can't do something...
How do you say that in Italian?
Voglio essere profeta in patria.
Okay.
In the sense that what I suffer a little bit of the Bulgari area is that they... It's kind of like Bordeaux. It's something that is made ex novo in a place where we didn't have the culture of drinking the wine that way. I'm not saying that they're doing it wrong. I'm absolutely not saying this, but it's not considered something that is are of the place. So what I try to do is to go back a little bit. Every Saturday morning, I open the winery and I have the old timers come in with their tanks and fill up the tanks of wine for their lunch or dinner at home. And every time they come and they always want to taste the wine. I think it's one of the most satisfactory comments is when they say, oh, this is like how we used to do it back in the days. It's not true. They didn't do it that way. But that feel, that taste, that attitude of making wine, I mean, it's what we do is it's a fantastic gesture. It's a form of art that gets people together. I mean, we do something that make people say the truth in a way. I mean, we really play with people's minds in a way. I mean, we almost produce happiness. I don't know how to explain this. But
well, I think that should be the goal of all wines, is to make people happy. And I think that sense that you're giving of happiness for the vines, but also happiness for the people that drink the wines, is evident in the names of the wines, in the playfulness, and in the labels. So tell us a little bit about the wines. And are you involved in the labels and the artwork on them?
Yeah, I do everything. Yeah, the labels, every wine has their little story. And it's a little bit of a personal thing for me. Not something that I promote, or at least I don't do this as marketing, but I do this as a sort of a to give the wine his own identity or its own little story for me. That, I don't know, I Toscani, for example, is my base wine, and it means people from Tuscany or the Toscani family. I mean, it's...
This is your Syrah.
Yeah, it's a Syrah made in stainless steel. And the logo on it, it was the first logo of my grandfather. My grandfather was a photographer as well, and he made the first image bank in Italy. We used to work for Corriere della Sera. He would go and take portraits of soccer players for the newspaper, and then he would archive them in this agency that he built with that logo, and he would resell it to Panini to do the stickers. He was kind of a crazy guy. So I wanted to bring him back. I called the Rosé with the flying horse as my two sisters, Lola and Ali, and I called it Loli. For example, the one with the pigeon on it, I have a label with a pigeon, with a portrait of a pigeon that I took with my kid's name, Lucia Romeo. So it's called Lumeo. So these are very personal things for me. I think wine, it's a very, 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 very personal interpretation of a place and a vine, a meteo, or a system where maybe it's hot, maybe it's cold, maybe it's windy. You have to sort of improvise in a way, you know, moments or seasons that may change. You plan your year and then it all just jumps in the air and your plan doesn't work. You have to replan it, but, you know, in the morning, because it's completely the opposite of what you thought. It's very similar to what is our family job since ages, where, you know, you work in art. And for me, it struck me like a lightning, that I was like, wow, this is really exactly what I was doing like before. I mean, I have to take sort of a portrait of my place, with my wines. It's not a question of following, call it fashions or movements. You know, the wine here comes out this way. I mean, I can tweak it a little bit. Everyone has their own taste. Probably if my sister would take over this place, she would do it a completely different thing. I mean, my father did it completely different. I did it different. And I think it's like playing an instrument. I mean, Bob Dylan doesn't play the guitar like Mark Knopfler. I mean, it's a guitar. I mean, it doesn't really, this is the fun part of making wine. It's a personal.
I like that approach and how in every way you're reflecting yourself, but also going back to your family as well. So that close personal tie reflected in the glass so that the wine could be from Toscany and from nowhere else. Now, you talk as well about linking to the territory. I'd like to turn to food. Is food important to you and local food, or do you feel that you're making wines that go with, you've traveled a lot with cuisines, international cuisines, and what's your relation with food and your wine?
So this area, to go back to what I said before, was an area of hunting. So here, even if we are by the water, we don't have the tradition of eating fish. Still now, if you sort of ask somebody or an old lady or even the younger generations to cook a fish here, they'll stick onion in it and lemon and a lot of herbs. We have this approach that fish is not really that good. So we are traditionally meat eaters, or at least. So what happened here is that we lost all the tradition of, for example, white wines that were made with maceration process. And we started to follow a little bit the French Provençal or whatever style of making wine that was a little bit more referred to a fish food market. On the other side, I think it's fun to make sort of a white wine that is more towards the meat approach of cuisine that is this area. So I remember when I was a little kid, we had a vineyard behind the house. I remember we would pick the white on Saturday and the red on Sundays. And we would put the white in one tank, the red in the other tank. We would macerate them exactly the same amount of days. And then we would take out the skins, press them together. So we would have a nasty rosé from the press. This was the way that we used to do the wines with the farmers that were the neighbors next to us. So they would come and help us to make the wine. Then the next weekend, we would go and help them to make their wine. And then we would go to the next house. It was a fun process but everybody had the same system to make the wine. I mean, I remember when those white wines that were big and strong and that had those tannins and it was wines that you would drink during the summer, but never with fish. It was always with whatever was the food there, a lot of chinguiale, a lot of hunting stuff.
Or porchetta with that style of wine.
I think that's the thing that I want to go back to is the fact that, you know, what we do in this area is not something that we go look for somewhere else. It's how we grew up and how we approach this. You know, I think also in the matter of market of wine, I think an importer, when they choose to have a winery, is because they want to take to their city or place or country a tradition of what they found somewhere else. I don't know if it makes sense, but it's you sort of bringing, you know, a tradition of something. It's not just bringing bottles, or you're bringing home something else. You're bringing home a postcard.
Yeah, I think that's really important. That's a very good point. And you really need to be able to convey that message, and your importers need to be able to understand what the soul of a place is. Rocco, finally, can we talk about hospitality at Toscani? You offer a number of really interesting experiences. Tell us a little bit about this.
I started this project a few years back, and we have around 7 houses, very, very, very small houses. It's like for couples, I would say.
Are these the former case coloniche from the Mezzadria?
No, not at all. I mean, there is one that is bigger house, but has 2 apartments, but the houses are very small. It's kind of like those, when my father used to buy the land, there always would be like a pollaio or a pigsty or a little place where they would keep the chickens and a little horse or the donkey. And he would rebuild these houses the same size as these shacks, but like with stones, with a real roof and really, really, really nice houses, like a small miniature Tuscan house. And then we have horses. We do trail rides. This summer, we started doing these events called Madama Rodeo, where we have like big barbecues and a lot of music and, you know, wine and cocktails. And I think the really fun part of this job is the fact that we get people together. What we do is to have people have fun. It's important that, and it's all tied together by the wine, because, I mean, that's the real thing, that when you're with a friend or two friends, you know, you pop a bottle, and it's that kind of stuff that warms up the hearts, I would say. And it's, you know, so I think it's more about what I want from this farm is the fact that it has to be a place when you go back home, you say, wow, you know, I was in a place where it was really fun. I mean, it was nice, it was good looking, and it was, you know, it was well kept and everything worked well. And it's something that you take home when you travel. When you go back home, you're mesmerized of whatever you saw. And it's the one thing that I want to do in this place is to make it really the cool place to be. I mean, it's coming along, but it's a lot of hard work. And it's, you know, we do, as I said, trail rides with horses, and we do dinners, and we organize, you know, like, we have a lot of companies that come and do dinners with their employees, and it's an experience, and I want to make it a fun experience. So that's what I basically do also, apart from all the vineyard work.
That sounds amazing. It does sound fun. It sounds like a unique experience. I know how much hard work it is to give people fun, to make people happy. And I know working in a vineyard is, you know, maybe some of the hardest work of all. It's constant through the year. Right now we're in winter, and you're in that cold vineyard pruning all those vines by hand and tying them down. And there's a lot of work to be able to give people the enjoyment. So, Rock, I really have enjoyed talking to you today, because you've given an insight not just to a place, to Casale Marittimo, to the Tuscan seaboard in the Provincia di Pisa, just above Bolgheri, an area that wasn't known for wine, but which obviously has massive potential. And Angelo Gaia was certainly astute, as one would expect, in his observations all those years ago. And I'm really excited to hear what you're doing. And I can't wait to visit you and taste the wines and to have some fun as well. So
I'm waiting for you here.
Thank you for sharing your time this morning. And I know you're going to now warm yourself up doing this podcast and then get back into the vineyard, but I really appreciate it. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Grazie, Rocco. I hope to see you soon.
Ciao. Thanks.
Ciao. All the best. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Wine, Food, and Travel with me, Mark Millen, on Italian Wine Podcast. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe right here or wherever you get your pods. Likewise, you can visit us at italianwinepodcast.com. Until next time, chin chin.